Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Pandora, or head on over to AmericaOutLoud.com. And you must check out the thousands of articles and podcasts updated daily. And while you're there, please share those on social media. Some of the top conservative contributors from all over the country over at AmericaOutLoud.com. And we appreciate it if you share. America Out Loud's facing the same social media censorship that most of conservative media is currently facing. So if you share the articles and podcasts, it helps us out a great deal. And we really appreciate that. We're excited for the show tonight. We're going to have on New York Post journalist Heather Robinson's going to be joining us once again to discuss what's going on in the news. You know, while everyone is distracted by the weirdos and degenerates in Hollywood, the resident in chief, Joe Biden, is once again getting a free pass. Well, not tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. We discussed last week how Joe Biden was going to Europe, and he did, and his trip was a disaster, just like we thought it would be. He's been a disaster since he went into office, but you just look at all his gaffes on this Ukraine conflict. He has said Russia needs regime change. His handlers walked that back. He said American troops were going to be in Ukraine. His handlers had to clarify that. He tried to claim that he wasn't restricting drilling here in the United States after the prices of gas continued to rise. That was proven wrong. Now we're hearing he gave out classified information while in Europe. Everything this president does is an unmitigated disaster and embarrassment to our great country, and it is really starting to add up. Rob, what are your thoughts on Joe Biden and his trip to Europe last week?
I don't know, Andrew. Maybe someone should, when he's at the podium and he starts to speak, maybe they should walk up and slap the heck out of him like Will Smith did Chris Rock. No, I'm not promoting violence. I'm just making a little joke there. But everything that you're saying is so spot on. Not only that, President Donald Trump, 45, warned us of a Joe Biden, I begrudgingly say it, presidency. Could we run the tape, please?
Joe Biden is weak. He's too scared to stand up to the radical left of his own party. They will make every city look like Democrat-run Portland, Oregon. No one will be safe in Biden's America. China would own our country if Joe Biden got elected.
It's one of the biggest scandals I've ever seen. They found the laptop, the family on the laptop. He's gone into hiding for 5 days.
You should have gas prices as of $6 and $7.
You see, he warned us. He told us that if Joe Biden becomes the president, gas prices would go up, $6 or $7. China would not respect us. Other countries would walk all over us. Unfortunately, all of this is happening. And why? Because we have a person in the White House who is incompetent. I don't take pride in saying that. And on this show, I have called Biden out from day one. Now, some of you are saying, well, if you don't take pride in saying it, think of the previous shows. I wasn't making fun of him the previous shows. I was speaking truth to power. I was speaking about what is. And what is right now is that we have a person in the White House who has to have cliff notes for his talking points. Now, they all use the teleprompter, but Biden uses the teleprompter and then he goes off key. He starts just wordsmithing, saying his own thing. And therein lies the danger. Because when he went overseas, he did it more than once, more than twice, three or four different times. And one of the instances that he went off key, off the teleprompter, is when he alluded to the fact that Putin has to be removed from office. Now, I know now the media is trying to dress it up. And I get that. But as he said, your words matter, especially if you're the president. Run the tape.
George, you and I know, and I think you do too as well, the words of a president matter.
The words of a president matter.
And the words the president says matter.
You've heard me say it before, words matter. And the words of a president particularly matter. No matter how good or bad a president is, the words they utter matter. I'll conclude with what you heard me say many times before. The words of a president matter. Even a lousy president.
He said it on more than one occasion before he came into office. And then for him to go overseas and try to clean up the mess that Kamala made and to create an even bigger mess with the whole energy felt Putin has got to be this man by God, he can't stay in office. Run the tape.
We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principle, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom and possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
Okay, what were our allies supposed to think? What was Putin supposed to think? Now, some of you can say, well, you know, he meant this. Well, let's just say this. Remember when Trump said that some of them are coming here across the border? Some of them are rapists. They're not sending their finest. And the media interpreted that as if though he was a racist. So what Biden said, his words matter. And we've said many times that Trump is bombastic. He should be careful with what he's saying. But we knew what he was saying. But when it comes to Biden, they want to dress it up. But remember, not too long ago, before he was the president, they had this to say about his snafus. Run the tape.
Vice President Biden sticks his foot in his mouth again.
Joe Biden sticks his foot in his mouth in Japan.
There's been another verbal faux pas from Vice President Joe Biden.
Vice President Joe Biden definitely has a reputation for speaking his mind, and his off-the-cuff style has got him into trouble yet again.
So based upon the case that I just laid out, Biden should be removed from office. But in doing so, Andrew and Heather, could be rather dangerous. Because if the 25th Amendment is evoked, and think of how many times when Trump was in office, the media ran and said, oh, we've got to get him out. Someone needs to do this. They need to invoke the 25th Amendment. And for what? While he was trying to make the world better or make America great again, they wanted to invoke the 25th Amendment because he wanted to stand up to China. He stood up to North Korea. He stood up to Iran. He told NATO, you need to pay your fair share. Invoke the 25th Amendment for that, whereas this guy is going to get us in another war. But if we do that, it could be extremely dangerous. Why? Well, because who would come up next? According to the Constitution, Kamala Harris. She's already made a disaster overseas. She couldn't get it right. She was only put in the position because of identity politics. She's a woman. She's a woman of color. No other credentials. Even Jill Biden herself said that of all the millions of people out there, why did he have to pick her? Well, because of identity politics. So let's say we evoke it and we remove him. She walks up. Well, we don't like her. We need to get rid of her. Who moves up next, according to the Constitution? The Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. It just doesn't get any better. So although we don't want him there, he should not be there. He's not qualified. We're stuck with him until the next election in 2024. That's my take on it. Heather, what do you say?
Yeah, I think that, listen, we have our argument with him, but I definitely don't think anything improves with Kamala or Nancy. I mean, you got it right there, Rob. And I will say one thing. In his defense, I think that he could be handling this Ukraine thing worse. Let me explain what I mean. I'm not talking about the gaffes and all of that. It is very unfortunate, I agree. But I think that this complicated, just powder keg of a situation, you know, is, I, you know, maybe in a sense, and nobody knows exactly what's around the corner as far as Russia and Ukraine, although there does seem to be some tentatively hopeful signs the past few days. I think both sides have been battered enough that there is a willingness to negotiate. And I think that we hear from some corners in our country what, you know, one friend of mine recently called you know, a very independent thinking woman called toxic war fever, where, you know, we hear some people, politicians from both sides of the aisle, just talking about no fly zone and you know, getting in there, pouring in, just escalating things. And I think that I disagree with that very much for a lot of reasons that I won't go into, you know, out of respect for time. But I think that one thing Biden has maybe, if not done right, at least not done wrong in this situation, is listen to the hawkiest of the war hawks. I think that would have been a terrible mistake. And whether because he's, you know, an old guy who's been around the block enough, or he's kind of passive and weak, you know, I think in this case, it's not the worst. He's not the worst type of president for us to have at this moment, because I think there are a lot of forces in the world who would like to see this Russia-Ukraine thing escalate. I personally believe, you know, we're being given a very simplistic picture from both sides of the aisle, and, you know, and I have my own theories as to maybe some of the reason for that, you know, speaking of corruption and all that. So I'm not saying that Biden's totally clear of that. I mean, maybe there's a lot that taints him as far as Ukraine and all, but I think at least he's not jumping on the toxic war fever bandwagon. And, you know, if only because of his sort of passivity, call it realism, call it, you know, being a member of, you know, the establishment long enough that he isn't trying to, you know, start a revolution and spread the gospel of democracy at the end of a sword and a NATO bomb. I mean, he just seems to be a little more sane, frankly, than a lot of the people in Washington at this point. So, yeah, I think we'd be worse off if something happens to him, because as you said, Kamala is the next in line, and Lord only knows who she'd listen to. So, yeah.
And who would she listen to, which is equally scary. The night that he got into office, the very next day, people were saying that they should immediately invoke the 25th Amendment. And I was right behind them. I'm like, yeah, that's right. But in doing so, look at what happens. It triggers a horrible effect. Nothing good would come of it. Nothing good would come of it, because we're replacing one knucklehead with another knucklehead. If we were to remove that knucklehead, there's Nancy Pelosi, who comes out and says that Joe Biden is the president for this time. He's the greatest person. Like, are you serious? Run the tape.
Our country could not be better served than with this most experienced, capable hands than yours, President Biden. He's just perfect.
Joe Biden is a great president. He is a gift. I've said to him sometimes, I'm glad you didn't win before, because we really needed you to win now for president. He's perfect. He's perfect for now.
Now you have her. These people, the only thing that they're doing, they're covering up for him. And while it drives us crazy, because we know that he's not, this position is not for him. But yeah, what can we do?
Yeah, I would agree. When the Republicans take back the House and Senate in November, I don't think impeaching Joe Biden would improve the country at all, because obviously Kamala Harris is just as bad, if not worse. And we all know what we think of Nancy Pelosi. The only thing I would give the Republicans some slight credit on is that they would be returning the favor for how they treated President Trump, the Democrats, that is. The Democrats have been playing dirty politics for years. So to see them have some fight in them and actually do something about this Joe Biden disaster would be nice in that sense. But I agree, I would be very nervous, if not scared, about President Kamala Harris backing him up.
Reciprocity does sound nice. And I would like for, and that's where my position came from all along, that look at what they did to President Trump, and it was unwarranted. But it was also a little of, he should not be there. He's incompetent, and we now see it. And although we would like for the media to stop giving him cover, but just imagine if they were to stop giving him cover, and they were truthful and just called it out the way it actually is that he's incompetent. He should not be there. He's constantly making snafus. No, he's not even making snafus. He's making major mistakes on foreign policy. For him to go overseas and to say that our troops, and he alluded to this, will be on the ground in Ukraine. That's dangerous. After saying that they would not be. For him to go there and give a fiery brand speech and say, this man, oh my God, he can't remain in office. And then the media comes in and say, oh, this was so like Theodore Roosevelt, not Theodore, but FDR. This is akin to Reagan saying, tear down that wall. It's like, no, not at all. And then for them to roll out Leon Panetta, who signed a letter saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russia disinformation, only to find out that that was a complete lie, that it was not Russia disinformation. Leon Panetta, I don't trust anything that he says. He has completely destroyed his credibility, completely destroyed it. Not only has he destroyed his credibility, the New York Times, CNN, all of the media, they have destroyed their credibility because they were trying to cover for Joe to get him into office and to sway the vote so that people would not know the truth. They have destroyed their credibility. There's no coming back, in my opinion. And this is a very sad day that institutions that are supposed to keep our politicians honest has been completely compromised. And for what? And they continue to do it because they don't like Trump. We have said, and I will say it again, that Trump is bombastic. Maybe Trump talks a little too much, and maybe he tweeted a little too much, but we will not doubt, and we cannot doubt, his patriotism and the love for this country. Whereas Biden, look at what he's done, not just in words, but in his actions. He's concerned about Ukraine's border, but look at our southern border. He's concerned about their oil, but look at our oil, and they're telling us these prices are blame Putin. Again, they want to blame Putin for his mistakes. This is unbelievable. But what do we do besides to wait it out? Because if he's gone, look at what happens. And remember, Joy Behar was saying, well, if we get rid of Trump, we'll have Mike Pence, and he's, oh my God, he's horrible. Oh, no. No. Playing with Biden and Kamala is like a double-edged sword. You're going to lose regardless. You're going to cut yourself. And if you remove the sword, you have Nancy Pelosi, and we know that she can't govern because she would allow the radical wing of her party to tell her what to do. AOC and the Trojan horses. What a tangled web we weave when first we try to deceive. And that's exactly what happened in this instance. And now we have Biden trying to walk back everything and saying, oh, I'm not walking back anything. Oh, yes, you are, with your cliff notes. And even with your cliff notes, you can't get it right. And when Trump, they discovered that he had written something on his hands. He wrote in his hands. Ha, 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 ha. But he knew what to say. Look at Biden. He is not bringing us to war. This man has failed miserably. We need to accept it. But in doing so, Heather and Andrew, what happens?
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, I don't mean to repeat myself, Rob and Andrew, but I think that in this case, as regards Ukraine and Russia, I think it's looking like there's a chance for some kind of an accommodation, some kind of resolution. Finally, I'm going to go out on the limb here a little bit because we all know it could, heaven forbid, completely turn tomorrow or next week or next month and turn into a 10-year bloody conflict with thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of more people killed, God forbid, just to arrive at the end at the same resolution, which is going to be some kind of compromise. But although some people believe, you know, it really ends when Putin gets the deal he wants, to quote Laura Ingraham, because he's got the nuclear weapons, you know, but either way, to my way of thinking, to drastically pour in more weapons or suggest escalating this, I think is really a bad idea. And I think that Biden, in his own sort of bumbling way, has kind of taken a middle path. You know, he is, as we know, arming the Ukrainians, which I know a lot of people feel was important to show support for a democracy, a smaller country that was invaded. As you guys know, I mean, I am sensitive to that view. I do understand it, and I do respect it. Although I think there's a bigger picture here, which we've discussed before. I do think, you know, I'm an independent. I'm a conservative-leaning independent, but maybe in this instance, I sound more like a traditional liberal. But I just, you know, I've done some studying of this, and I do think that there's, you know, a kind of pushing of the gospel of democracy across Europe into Russia's backyard, which has been, you know, done by our elites, our foreign policy elites, rather aggressively for the past two decades. And I don't personally really see why it was necessary to push that issue with Ukraine. If you kind of divorce the emotion from it, even Zelensky himself said several times recently things about maybe that wasn't really so important. Maybe that isn't so important. So anyway, my point is just that I think that Biden is kind of maybe walking a tightrope here. He's supporting the Ukrainians with weaponry, but he's doing it only up to a certain point. He said, I guess a couple weeks ago, he gave that speech where he said, listen, don't kid yourselves. You start with the no-fly zone and shooting down the pilots and having American troops over there. You're talking about World War III. And I have to say, even though I share your dismay over his various big flaws and, you know, his corruption, his befuddledness, whatever, his caving to the hard left, I think he hasn't totally caved to this very, hawkish position, which I don't think is in the interest of America. I have friends and people, fellow journalists I know who believe that really our country has kind of been hijacked by an elitist foreign policy establishment that is out of touch with the instincts of the American people and what we need, protecting our own borders, our own economy, you know, that these should be the priorities over and above proselytizing democracy on the other side of the world in regions that aren't even ready for it. And, you know, I think that Biden has kind of, in his own clumsy way, sort of kind of held the line against that aggressive foreign policy, hawkish kind of, you know, let's farm out and proselytize all around the world kind of attitude. And he's kind of maintaining a little bit of common sense here and saying, okay, let's support these people, you know, let's help them. We'll take them as refugees. We'll try to save lives to a point. But we cannot be the arbiter of this conflict on the other side of the world. And we don't want to escalate to World War III over whether Ukraine gets to belong to NATO. I mean, it's not in the interest of the American people. So I've got to say that I think I have a little bit of, maybe respect would be too strong a word, but I have a little comfort in that he's not just lost his marbles, whatever marbles he has left, you know, to over this, the way a lot of people have, from my vantage point. So I will say that in his defense.
And Andrew, you seem to agree somewhat with Heather, but what are your thoughts? We talked about it before.
Yeah, I'm with Heather. Absolutely. I don't want to escalate tensions in Ukraine. If it were up to me, we would pretty much stay out of it from here on out. But I don't think abandoning Ukraine plays well politically for Republicans, unfortunately. So a lot of them have to be careful what they say. And I think the Republicans have been doing a good job just kind of sitting back, not giving Biden too much grief about his job that he's done in Ukraine so far, because as Heather said, he's not escalating tensions, but they have to walk a real fine line about what they say about foreign aid and other things, because people are very sensitive to Ukraine right now, and that does seem to play well politically, is to be sympathetic towards their side.
I know, I'm sympathetic for the Ukrainians. You guys are both saying that he hasn't done anything to escalate it, but I think that latest incident with him giving that speech, I mean, that says a lot. And him also implying that we're going to put troops on the ground. This is not our war, as I've said. I think the Ukrainians are, you know, doing the best they can. I do believe that they've lost this from a military standpoint, because Russia has decimated the country. Now, PR-wise, they're winning the PR battle. We now know that Russia's army isn't the big, bad army that we thought that it was, or that he purported it to be. And they're now looking at retrieving, but the damage has been done, as I said. It's done. And I think that it's over. In as much as they've destroyed the country. Now, I think that the only thing left for Putin is to, you know, find Zelensky and say, okay, it's over now. And it's unfortunate that that would only be if they were to kill him or
I don't
find him and arrest him.
I don't think I'm going to go out on a limb again, Rob, and say I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think anything bad's happening to Zelensky. I hope I'm right about that. I wish him, you know, safety. I think he's a very wily man. I think he's used his acting chops and the media very effectively. His Jewish identity, which he did not run on when he was elected, you know, he's using it now to great effect. And I think that if, you know, Putin or the Russians were to kill him, he'd be martyred. It would be, you know, in addition to being a tragedy, it would be the greatest thing for Ukraine's cause ever. So I don't think Putin's stupid. I don't think he's going to kill him. I think that things are going to hopefully, I hope, you know, especially if the West and the rest of the world don't keep heaping and pouring weapons in, I think things will hopefully move towards some kind of resolution in the next few weeks, maybe months. But I think that from the start, Russia and Putin's demands, you know, I don't know everything about them all, but I know that the main demand and always the first demand for the past decade has been very clear. You know, the Russians have been clear that Ukraine in NATO was an absolute red line for them. They told us, you know, again and again, and this is not to justify what they've done, but it was said many, many times, many, many ways, including before Putin actually conducted the invasion. He sat around for about a month saying, I don't want to invade, but these are my demands. Number one, I want an assurance. Ukraine will not be recruited into NATO. We wouldn't give it to him. Okay. And now my understanding is from what I'm reading, that one of the tenets of the peace talks happening now, which I think Turkey and Israel, I'm very proud to say that Israel has stepped up to leadership in helping to try to broker some kind of compromise here. One of the stipulations is that Ukraine will not have missiles, have NATO missiles in it. And these other countries, I think, if I'm understanding right, they're proposing that they'll form their own security alliance to protect whatever parts of Ukraine will be autonomous but neutral from, you know, invasion. So basically, it sounds like what it's moving toward is some kind of a compromise wherein Russia doesn't take over the whole country, but allows them, you know, to govern themselves as a neutral non-NATO country, you know. And I think that's what should have happened in the first place. But, you know, we got a lot of testosterone on all sides. Sorry, fellas. It's not the women necessarily know any better either. I think that this whole thing, you know, was unnecessary. But of course, you know, all war is in a sense. You know, I just think it's very sad. It's very tragic. And I you know, I just think there is a compromise solution. There is, you know, a path forward. That's my opinion. And I hope that that happens, you know, as opposed to everybody just insisting that everything, you know, Russia does is a lie and Putin's Hitler and he'll keep taking more territory no matter what. All these things that are, you know, yes, is that theoretically possible? Yes. But I don't really think there's strong evidence that that's likely to happen. And I think that there is a compromise possible. I think, you know, that, you know, this was at least partly about security for both peoples. And so anyway, my prediction is that, I know predictions are an easy way to sort of screw yourself over and look stupid if things turn out differently. But I think Zelensky's going to be fine. And I think, you know, that he'll make a deal with Putin. And hopefully that'll happen before, you know, many thousands more people die.
Very well said. It'll be interesting to see how much bloodshed happens before Zelensky reaches that point. And to think all that we've said about Joe Biden in the first half, and as bad as he's been, besides maybe Mike Bloomberg, Joe Biden was the most center-leaning candidate the Democrats had running in a field full of radicals. The scary truth is, I think things will get worse from the Democrat Party before they get better. You're tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We'll be back with more After Dark with Robin Andrew, with our special guest, journalist for the New York Post, Heather Robinson.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on the precautions, but deep down, you still want to avoid getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray. Made in the USA, Cofix RX reduces viral loads and minimizes the risk of you getting sick. Find a retailer near you or click our banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both on the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Wow, that was a very good first half discussion on invoking the 25th Amendment and what could follow if it happens and how we got there. I go back and I look at some of the tapes, and it is hard to believe that he has aged and become so decrepit, but he has. So my question for you guys, since we're in the middle of all this, and it's two-pronged, and I think I know the answer to both, but I want you to share your thoughts also. As I said, if the 25th Amendment was invoked and Kamala stepped in line, what are your thoughts on that? And then secondly, Ukraine. Do you guys think that technically Putin has won this war? As I said, I think that from a PR standpoint, Zelensky has definitely won. And I think it's really over. I mean, what more damage can he do? He just need for Ukraine to concede, to say, okay, we will do this, that, and the other thing. And as I said in one of our other shows, all Zelensky had to do was say, we're not going to join NATO. And I think that this would have never happened. But here we are. So again, to you guys, Kamala stepping up, good, bad, and the war. Is it over? Has he won? He's just continuing the carnage because he can? Who wants to take it first?
I'll go first. I think, first off, Kamala Harris would be very bad as the president of the United States. Unfortunately, even worse than what we have right now. She's got a history of being a radical, and she caves to any little pressure that comes her way. So she would be soft and a complete pushover as president of the United States. And as bad of a speaker as Joe Biden is, I think Kamala Harris is even worse. So I think she would have even more gaffes that somebody would have to cover. I imagine Jen Psaki would retire by that time because her job has got to be getting old defending President Biden on a daily basis. As far as Russia and Ukraine goes, Rob, you make some good points that Zelensky has won a lot of PR roles. You look at how the world is looking at Russia right now, and they're looking at them as almost like villains. I don't think Russia has won the war yet. They're obviously on their way to, it appears, but Zelensky seems to be very stubborn in surrendering anything. So I think it'll take quite some time. I know they've got these peace talks coming up, but I think Ukraine's going to be stubborn and not want to give up as much as Russia is going to want them to. So I don't think Russia has won the war yet, but I think they're on their way to. And I think it's got to be only a matter of time before Zelensky has to give in, before some of the bad publicity starts going on him, because he's going to be allowing so much bloodshed to happen when he could just surrender this land when it looks like it's going to be inevitable anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point, Andrew. I think that, I mean, one thing I might take slight different with you on is I don't know that it would have been over if Zelensky had simply alone said no NATO. He has a couple times recently said something to that effect. I think this war is really between us and Russia, between the US-led military alliance, NATO, which, you know, we call it peacekeeping. Okay, the Russians don't see it that way. NATO's dropped a lot of big bombs, and we don't have to get into the right or wrong of that, but I think there's been a lack of imagination in our foreign policy elite in seeing this from their position. You know, for us and most people, it's like, well, what's wrong with NATO in Ukraine? Ukraine has the right to NATO. Yes, in a perfect world, everybody has the right to everything, but the reality is, NATO bombed a lot of people, killed thousands and thousands of civilians in Belgrade and Pristina and Kosovo in the 90s and early 2000s. You know, these were Russia's allies. They don't see that as a smiley face, harmless peacekeeping force. To them, this is like checkmate. And so even if Zelensky has repeatedly expressed some ambivalence about this whole NATO thing. He at one point said he feels big-footed by the West, that he feels that the West offered him this carrot of NATO membership and kept offering it, but then didn't give him a path forward. So he, I think, feels, and the Ukrainians have been, in some ways, you could say, manipulated by the West. They've been used. There's also a lot of information, you know, that has been basically scrubbed from our media, but it's come out a little bit via the New York Post that Ukraine has been a money laundering area for corrupt U.S. politicians. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. You know, we've, I think, in some ways used this country. I'm talking about Ukraine. And I think that, you know, we really need to be part of the solution here. You know, I don't want to sound like, listen, I have no affection for Vladimir Putin. I don't know him from a hill of beans. He's probably a thug, and I wouldn't want to live under his rule. So this isn't about liking him. It's just being logical that I think that, you know, there's been some pretty boneheaded U.S. foreign policy that has set the stage for something that, you know, is brutal. And I don't think Putin should have done it, but it was very, in some sense, it was predictable, you know. And I think we, just as, you know, some of our behaviors have helped to create a fertile situation for the crisis, I think we also have a role in diffusing it. And instead of diffusing it, we're pouring more weapons in. So I don't know that it's going to end anytime super soon because of that, because we're keeping it going. But I think, you know, if we ease up on that, and, you know, I guess an argument could be made that there was something accomplished by it. Yes, the Ukrainians got the opportunity to fight for their autonomy and they were aided by us. If you believe that's a value, then yes, that's been done. And yes, I think the only thing that pumping more and more and more weapons in serves is to prolong it, because, you know, everybody knows that Russia has weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons. And, you know, they're this far in, they're not going to just, you know, turn tail and surrender without being given anything. I mean, it's just logically not going to happen. So the question becomes, okay, you know, Ukraine's made this strong showing, and you know, what now can both sides get that will allow them to save face and for the whole thing to calm down and for the real tragedy to stop, which is, you know, the death of so many civilians, you know? So yeah, I, you know, I really think that we, you know, as you guys know I'm an outlier. I know my opinion is not the popular one, you know, now on either side of the aisle, but I just feel like, I don't think it's the fault of Americans, of our people. I think our people's instincts are good, and I think we have compassion for the Ukrainians, and that's very pure in a lot of cases. But I do think we've been misdirected and I think manipulated somewhat by our foreign policy establishment and a corrupt political culture that uses Ukraine for its own purposes, it would seem, and is obsessed with this idea of proselytizing democracy into every corner of the earth. And I think Americans, ordinary Americans, ought to have had quite enough of that, frankly, by now. So I'd like to see the American people, you know, gain a little perspective here and say, yes, we have compassion for Ukraine and Ukrainian people, but that means helping them, as you said, Andrew, to, you know, yes, we've helped them defend their land and themselves, but now there's a time for that, and there's a time for common sense and for recognizing that, you know, unfortunately, they're not going to get everything they want. So let them get some of what they want, you know, and let Russia get some of what it wants before thousands and thousands more of them die. You know, that's what I think, you know, we should be encouraging.
Nope, I completely understand, because as I said, our democracy is not for everyone, although we would like to think that it is. It isn't. And it's not a one size fit all. Now, what about your, what are your thoughts on Kamala invoking the 25th?
I think we're better off with Joe. That's all.
Better off with Joe. Yeah. When you think about it, and as much as like I said, I've lamented and said, oh, he's got to go. But when you think about what's on the other side, wow. Like, I don't know about that, because things could be worse, believe it or not. They could be worse. And speaking of worse, because we're at the end of the week. I'm not sure if you guys watched the Oscars or not. I did not watch it. I had better things to do. And I really hate talking about this story. I think that it's just, I could care less if these folks just beat each other up. And this whole thing with we don't condone violence. And when you look at the movies are violent. And it's just like, okay, what is it? You know, have at it. These people are just over-pampered individuals. It's unfortunate what happened. I've heard both sides. What do you guys want to say about it? I know you're dying to talk about it. Go for it.
Yeah, it's just,
I don't like it.
I think everyone's given an opinion on this by now, but my opinion is Will Smith comes off looking like a lunatic. I mean, Chris Rock, he's known for his barbs at these award shows. I mean, I don't know what Will Smith thinks they bring Chris Rock out to do. He's obviously comes there to make fun of people. That's what Chris Rock does. And a comedian, everybody knows in Hollywood, you're allowed to say things when you're a comedian. Almost a lot of things are off limits at these award shows. It's almost like a roast a lot of times. So I've never seen someone react like Will Smith did, and his walk up to the stage trying to look like an alpha, and then the smack, and then the screaming profanity at his chair. It was just all looked like a big show, but obviously there was some realism to it. And yeah, I think Will Smith just comes off looking like a lunatic. I think Chris Rock handled himself pretty well, given the circumstances. And to see so many members in the media justify assault on stage, I mean, that's what that was. That was an assault. And they're acting like it's no big deal that Chris Rock got assaulted. Will Smith defended his wife, a Black woman. I've seen how a lot of people put it. It's just really sad that they're framing it that way, because that was crazy behavior. Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, I basically agree with you, Andrew. I think that I felt for Chris Rock. I, you know, feel for entertainers, writers, artists. We all understand the concept of free speech. And I think it's a challenging concept for anybody, but especially for those who are less mature, maybe less bright. I mean, I think that we're all anti-censorship until something offends us, but it's a hard thing for people to sometimes suffer the slings and arrows of insults and views they disagree with and bigoted views and et cetera. But the thing is, it goes back to the old lesson we learned in kindergarten, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names can never hurt me. This was a physically violent reaction to an emotional hurt from words. And it's yes, it's wrong. It's dumb. I think that that said, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form justifying, I thought it was awful, but, you know, I think the impulse may have contained some sincere love for his wife. I don't know what's going on between them. But I think that, you know, I think it was wrong. You know, he clearly lost control of himself. I mean, if you're going to lose control of yourself over anything, you know, defense of your family is the only, you know, is the only excuse or self-defense that could be mitigating, you know. That said, I mean, I think his comparison, you know, afterward, it was kind of bizarre the way Will Smith started talking about King Richard, the character he played in that wonderful movie. And that was really an off-base comparison because that was a character who was defending his daughters and stepdaughters from potential real physical abuse. He was an older guy. I don't know if you guys saw the movie, but he, you know, he's dealing with gang members who are threatening to rape one of his daughters. And, you know, apparently this is based on a true story with, you know, Venus and Serena Williams' dad. And he was, obviously he's an incredibly brave man. And he actually confronted a gang of young guys, you know, and got himself beaten nearly to death. So I think it's pretty self-congratulatory for Will Smith to compare himself to that character. You know, I mean, he's a big guy. He went up and hit and humiliated a smaller man for saying something that was, he wasn't threatening or hurting Will Smith's wife. So it's a totally different situation, you know? But I think that, it was disturbing to see. And, you know, I think the best thing maybe is to raise awareness about the difference between, you know, speech and violence. And that said, I mean, I did see that Will Smith offered an apology, belated, but, you know, perhaps sincere, to Chris Rock today, saying he lost control of his emotions and he's apologizing and there's no place for violence. So that's good, you know. And, but I am disturbed to hear people say things like Chris Rock shouldn't have told the joke. You know, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, listen, comedians tell jokes, like you said, and I'll tell you what, I've spent a lot of time in comedy clubs because I have dear friends who are comics, and I have heard a lot of rough stuff. And that, you know, it was surprising to me that Will Smith lost it over this, because it really was not a particularly vicious or mean joke. I mean, he was comparing Jada to another beautiful woman, you know, Demi Moore in G.I. Jane, which is, I think, why Chris said, you know, this is a G.I. Jane joke, man. I mean, it wasn't that he was comparing her to a freak or something or to some hideous person. So, you know, I've heard a lot rougher material. And, you know, I think it would have been bizarre as it was, and it still wouldn't have been excusable, but it would have been less bizarre if, you know, if Chris Rock had been like needling her and, he, you know, all night and just hammering it and or something. But I mean, it was just one quick joke. So, yeah, clearly Will's reaction was out of proportion to the situation. And my speculation would be that there are some other things going on with him psychologically and in their marriage. And I kind of wondered, could something have like gone on between Chris Rock and Jada Smith or something at some point? That's just totally my speculation, because his reaction just seemed like, you know, like it would be more, you know, like something like that. But I don't know. That's my take.
Do you think these guys are just over-pampered? These Hollywood entertainers, and we give them all this attention, and I haven't seen any of the movies that were nominated.
King Richard. Well, Best Picture. A good movie. It's a good movie.
Didn't see King Richard. The dog, the movie about the dog, the movie about the, I can't even think of the names. Whereas back in the day, I could name all of the movies and now can't. And it's almost as if though they're congratulating themselves or put something out there. Oh, well, let's put this out. This one should definitely be nominated for an Oscar. It's like, but how many people have seen it? Whereas you can think of movies like The Godfather, which is celebrating, I think, its 50th anniversary.
Right.
And people still remember it. But who will remember any of these movies?
Right. I would agree. The movie industry is in the toilet right now. Never before have we seen a time where there's so many bad movies coming out and unremarkable movies. Of the movies that were nominated, I'm an old school comic book reader, so I do want to see that Shang-Chi movie and this new Spider-Man. I haven't gotten around to seeing either one of them yet, but I would watch those. But I really didn't know a lot of the movies that I saw in the highlights. I did not watch the Oscars. But yeah, I also want to mention that the opening of the Oscars with Wanda Sykes and Amy Schumer and some other comedian, I forget her name, but I didn't watch it, but I read an article about what they said, and these jokes were so lame. I mean, Chris Rock needed to come out and do some hard hitters to get the crowd going after that opening segment. I mean, it was that bad. But anyways, yeah, I would agree, Rob, that movie industry is in trouble. There's just not a lot coming out that really piques my interest, but then again, I don't pay attention like I used to either.
Well, you mentioned the three hosts, Amy Schumer and Wanda Sykes. The other person, her name was Regina Hall. She's an actress. And her performance, again, I didn't watch it. I only saw little snippets. I thought was rather interesting. Well, not interesting, but questionable, because she was groping the men and making comments about men. Now, imagine had that been a male host doing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And we could have said that, okay, well, it was theater is just part of their shtick, and I'm okay with that. But in the woke society that we're in now, had it been a male doing that, they would have all had an issue with it,
mm-hmm.
and came back and said, oh, this is not right. How dare they? They're not giving women any respect. They're just looking at us like we're meat.
Mm-hmm.
But she's allowed to do it. And you don't say anything.
Right.
Look at the double standard.
Yeah. It's pretty, I mean, it is hypocritical, you know. It's sort of like I guess they would probably argue that, well, because men are physically stronger, more powerful, yada, yada, you know, that it isn't funny in the same way.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, they probably would have. But,
you know, but I think you're right. It's, you know, how much credibility you have to complain about, you know, the disrespect when you're, anyway, I didn't see it. So I did hear about it.
And something else I want to bring up. They always talk about the dress and how people dressed. Is it me or are people wearing less clothing? And that's just not only at the Oscars. You look at regular TV news stations, at the anchors, and like, what's going on here? The sleeveless tops for the women, the low cleavage, the tight mm-hmm. dresses. And I look back a decade ago and everyone looked, I want to say, professional.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a lot of, because you're giving the news. It's not about you. It's about the news. But now it's about the person giving the news. And you know, either it's the attire, and then for the men, you know about their personal lives. I don't know. It has just gotten gone too far, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see all of that when you're giving the news. It should be about the news and not about you.
Right. And it's ironic, too, if that's the case. I mean, because we're supposed to be so, you know, against any sort of sexualization of anybody in the workplace or anybody noticing anybody else sexually, or heaven forbid, commenting on someone's appearance. But here at the same time, you have a very provocative kind of style. You know, I mean, I've always felt that, I want to tread carefully here, because, you know, any kind of common sense discussion of this invokes the ire of the wokesters. Not that I care about that, but you know, it's, I don't want to sound blaming the victim if somebody's harassed. I don't think there's any place for that. But I do think that just as a matter of common sense, you know, I mean, if you're going to be mortally offended if somebody compliments your appearance, or that's not really consistent with dressing in a sexy way. I mean, you know, if your priority is that things be very buttoned up and professional, then you probably should dress more conservatively for work. I mean, that's just common sense. I mean, that doesn't mean that you deserve it if somebody harasses you. It just means if you don't want to be annoyed by that or bothered for your own sake, you'd probably want to project a more serious image, you know? And if you like compliments, then you'll, you know, gussy it up a little bit. I mean, to me, that's just, you know, it's been a revelation to me that you're not allowed to say that or make a common sense observation like that, you know, but I know what you're talking about. And personally, it doesn't offend me because I feel like, wow, you know, we women, we put a lot of time into, you know, our looks. A lot of us, we try to go to the gym and stay in shape and take care of our hair and our nails. And, you know, that doesn't mean we want to be constantly sexualized and not taken seriously, but it means that we enjoy our femininity and we, you know, we don't mind being viewed as attractive. And I, you know, for me, there's never been a contradiction, you know, between that and wanting to be taken seriously as a professional. I think both things within reason can coexist. You know, I mean, you're not going to walk into work in some super low cut thing like you're dressed to go to a burlesque performance. But I mean, you know, you can still look feminine and pretty and try to, you know, accentuate your, you know, femininity and be serious and professional, you know. But you know, but I know what you're saying. It's kind of like there's a contradiction. Like on the one hand, the society has become so punitive toward anyone who transgresses in even a slight way, you know, paying the wrong compliment or something. And then at the same time, there's no diminution in the sexy sort of presentation, you know, that a lot of, you know, newscasters or people on TV use. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I kind of feel for you men with it. It's sort of like, you know, women, a lot of women are sort of presenting themselves in a sexy way, but heaven forbid you look or you notice or you say anything, then you're going to be destroyed. So I think, yeah, dare I say it? I mean, I think there's kind of a wanting it both ways to some degree, you know.
Yeah, well said. Thank you so much to our guest, Heather Robinson, journalist for the New York Post, for coming on once again. We appreciate that as always. Thank you all for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutloud.com. And while you're there, please share those podcasts and articles. They're updated daily, thousands of podcasts and articles. You guys definitely want to go to AmericaOutloud.com and check it out if you have not done so already. We appreciate it if you help share the content. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, or wherever you download your podcast. We'll see you next time. And remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.